to Joe Uline, the Uliners. Joe will be appearing at Portland this Saturday evening at 6:30 at the FL-CIO Hall, just south of Powell on 32nd Street, Southeast 32nd. Also, thanks to Moles, Jan Hocken, Mike Snedifer, Fran Michelle, Larry Bolden. This is Cable Radio in Portland, Oregon, live stream to the universe, whoever you are out there, and you can support us. Go to our homepage and become a member, or if you're a member, give us a gift. Finally, you can hear this show or any part of it again or any of our previous shows or recommend us to your friends by going to KVU FM, Old Mole Variety Hour. Today's show should be up very soon, maybe today, surely tomorrow. Join us again next week for more news, views, reviews, and interviews from the Mole's Underground Perspective. I'm Bill Resnick. Patrice Kalberg was our ace engineer and really harassed today. Thank you so much, Patricia.
Good morning. This is, you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is not Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we have Kathleen Stevenson is going to be here with an interview about today's deal between the United States and 11 other Pacific Rim nations on the TPP. It is just 10:01. Stay tuned.
2, 3, 4. KBOO Community Radio is proud to present A Hard Day's Night as part of the KBOO at the Clinton Monthly Film Series. The Beatles made this film in 1964 as they portray a rock and roll band traveling from Liverpool to London for a television broadcast, and wackiness ensues. Again, that's A Hard Day's Night, Thursday, October 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Teaching with Purpose Conference on October 9th and 10th at Park Rose Middle School, located at 11800 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland, Oregon. The Teaching with Purpose Conference provides information, tools, and materials relating to culturally responsive teaching. The conference aims to address legislation relating to culturally responsive education in Oregon and around the country. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO Public Affairs. Air Cascadia is off today. And with me by phone is Sean Flynn. Sean Flynn is Associate Director of the Program on Information Justice and Intellectual Property at the Washington College of Law at American University. He has written pieces on the TPP, which was just negotiated today. A deal was negotiated in Atlanta, and we want to hear about that. Sean Flynn, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Can you talk about at all what was negotiated? I know it was behind the scenes, and I don't know how much has been released about that.
Yeah, well, that's the first interesting aspect of this negotiation, is that, you know, usually when you have the announcement of the end of an international negotiation, then what is released is the text of the agreement that has been agreed upon. But today's announcement, we did not receive any text, so we do know some of what is in it, but we still, our only source of information about that is leaked versions of previous versions of the agreement, the newest of which was from May 11th of this year.
And the sticking point that's mentioned in some of the articles seems to be around pharmaceuticals. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yeah, well, that's one of the couple things that has been mentioned publicly, which is, you know, one of the final sticking points was around how much additional monopoly protection beyond patents we would give to new forms of biologic medicines. These are new and incredibly expensive medicines. Many, many new cancer medicines are part of this. There's no current international obligation in any previous international agreement to provide any monopoly protection in the form of what they call data exclusivity to biologic drugs. This appears to be the first agreement, international agreement, that will bind the U.S. and other countries to providing these additional monopoly protections in the years to come.
You say in a statement that the TPP will, it's now clear that it will be worse on both process and substance for public interest concerned than the last plurilateral intellectual property agreement that the U.S. negotiated. That's the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is a very useful kind of benchmark. The anti-counterfeiting trade agreement was completed in 2010. And it was rather soon after rejected by the European Parliament in overwhelming margins, and it was never submitted to the U.S. Congress. So it's not now law. It's considered a failed agreement. And one of the big reasons that agreement failed was because of intense mobilization and uproar among two major communities. It was the internet rights community, people concerned about rights of people to share and access information over the internet, and access to medicines groups are concerned about the prices and access to generic medicines in developing countries, also in wealthier countries as well. And on those two issues, you know, looking at the various leaked agreements and looking at what was said today, it appears that the TPP will really be worse in both regards, both issues and both on the process and substance. The process we've mentioned, which is that, you know, under ACTA, There were actually releases of the draft text on at least two occasions. The formal text was released for public comment by the government. But in TPP, there's been no release. On the day that ACTA was finalized, there was a release of text. But today, no release. So, and today, Froman basically indicated that he would probably wait another 30 days, the United States Trade Representative, before releasing the text to the public at all, meaning that the first shot the public will probably get to see the text is going to be over the Thanksgiving and December, holiday season. On the substance, we know from a series of links and from what's been said in press statements, et cetera, that a lot of the issues that were left out of ACTA or were explicitly taken out of ACTA will reappear within TPP. So this includes, you know, one major issue, the internet service liability. This is requirements within the international law that internet service providers take down information that is alleged by content owners to violate the internet. This is whenever you see kind of a YouTube video that's been removed. This is the law in the United States that requires that.
Hello?
To all the team. Hello?
Oh, sorry, we lost you there for a minute, John. You were talking about, you were giving an example about taking down a YouTube video.
Oh, yeah, sure. So, you know, one of the rules that is in the TPP that was taken out of ACTA was notice and takedown rules requiring internet companies to take down information off the internet in response to requests by content holders. And then the other, on the access to medicine side, actually all the patent and access to medicine issues were removed from the final text of ACTA, and they are now put back in the TPP. So this includes border measures, the ability of border guards, actually requirements for border guards to police patented medicines. This includes extensions of patents on existing medicines. We talked about biologics. It's just a whole host of issues that the groups like the Doctors Without Borders have been protesting as bad patent policy, and they will be likely included in this final agreement.
And so what are the next steps? It goes to Congress?
Yeah, so the next steps is, you know, probably today or sometime this week, the USTR will notify Congress that it has completed an agreement. And then within at least 30 days from that, it has to actually release the agreement to Congress and the public. And then there'll be an at least 60-day period in which Congress has to allow a public period before it can vote. And so the earliest it would be able to vote on this agreement is probably sometime in January. But most likely there'll be, you know, hopefully some public debate about the actual substance of this agreement once we can find it.
And what do you anticipate as far as how it will fare in the current Congress?
Not my specialty and very hard to predict. Obviously, we're going into a presidential season. On the one hand, that could make it very controversial and the subject of a lot of debate. On the other hand, Congress has already tied its hands. So, you know, earlier this year, Congress passed what's called fast track negotiating authority, which allows this and other agreements to be negotiated by the administration with only an up or down vote by Congress. So Congress cannot go through the agreement and pick out some of these controversial issues that I've mentioned and force them to change. They have to either take the entire trade agreement or leave the entire trade agreement, which just makes it that much harder for our congressional representatives to affect the agreement in any way. It's basically done. Or to reject it, because they'll have to reject, you know, what they might consider the good with the bad.
And what do you have recommendations for people who oppose the kind of things that you're talking about that are in this agreement?
Well, this is the time, you know, to begin reaching out to Congress. I mean, one of the most helpful things that could be asked for is to demand that the administration speed up the process in which it releases this agreement so experts like me can actually read and comment on it in public and inform the public debate. And then there are other groups that are working on this issue on a social mobilization side. One of the key ones would be Public Citizen. This is the Washington, D.C.-based member consumer organization, and they have an organization called Trade Watch, which is releasing as much information as they can about this agreement and also working on the social mobilization of these aspects.
And if people wanted to read your article, Now We Know TPP is Worse Than ACTA, how could they do that?
Yeah, so you can find that and other work by me and other experts on particularly on the information and intellectual property sides on our website, which is infojustice.org.
Great. Anything else, Sean, that you think is important to say about this in this minute or so that we have left?
Well, I guess the one other issue we haven't covered is the investor state dispute settlement apparatus. And this is the ability of private corporations to sue governments based on the regulations, particularly on intellectual property. It allows private governments or private companies to sue governments over the limitations and exceptions, things like fair use, that they adopt within their intellectual property policies. We've seen some corporations begin to use that. The TPP will probably worsen the problem.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for speaking with us and being on with us here on KBOO Portland today. Thank you, Sean Flynn.
My pleasure.
And let me tell people again that Sean Flynn is Associate Director of the Program on Information, Justice, and Intellectual Property at the Washington College of Law at American University. He just wrote the piece, Now We Know TPP is Worse Than ACTA, and you can read that at infojustice.com. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO Public Affairs, and stay tuned. Coming up, it will be Locus Focus.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. This morning, we're departing a little from our usual focus on the environment to talk about Japanese culture and spirituality in the wake of the March 11, 2011 earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster in Japan. My guest is Marie Mutsuki Mockett, whose family owns a Buddhist temple 25 miles from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. After the earthquake and tsunami destroyed the nuclear facility, radiation levels prohibited the burial of Marie's Japanese grandfather's bones. At the same time, she was grieving for her American father, who had died unexpectedly. As Japan mourned thousands of people lost in the disaster, she wondered, how does one cope with overwhelming grief? Marie is the author of Where the Dead Pause and the Japanese Say Goodbye, which describes her experiences in Japan in the aftermath of events that shook the country to its core. Marie, welcome to Locus Focus.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much, Barbara. It's such a pleasure to be on your show.
It was a pleasure to read your book, actually, and it was really an introduction for me to things about Japanese culture I knew nothing about.
I'm so glad. That was part of my goal.
So I guess we should sort of lay out first that you, let's just talk a bit about your lineage and so people understand where you're coming from in relationship to your whole Japanese journey.
Sure. So my mother is from Japan, born and raised. My father was American. My parents were both music students. They met in Vienna, Austria, in the most romantic way possible. They were in standing room at the opera, and she's 5'2", and couldn't see because he was 6'2", and he was standing in front of her. And that's how they met, and they got married. And I was born in California, but I started going to Japan.